Selection Committee, I welcome you with open arms.
Is that so? How late do you stay open?
You don't understand. I could have had class. I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
I hope they are watching. They'll see. They'll see and they'll know. And they'll say, why, she wouldn't even harm a fly.
What's going on, everybody? You're listening to NoCo Cinema here on WGM Plus. We are your guide to cinema here in the city of Chicago. I am Tom Hush.
And I'm Connor Cornelius.
And what a week it has been.
I know.
We've had a very busy last couple of weeks.
I've seen you so much in the last couple of days.
I know.
What is this, our ninth interview in 24 hours?
Something like that. Yeah. Something to that effect. I was over at the Whitehall Hotel speaking to Raya Martin, who directed a fantastic neo-noir called Smaller and Smaller Circles. All takes place in the Philippines. He's a Filipino filmmaker himself. And we had a lot to talk about. And I talked to him before I saw the screening at the Asian Pop-Up Cinema. And so got the kind of, I didn't want to spoil it for myself. I was like, just tell me about you. Tell me a little bit about the film. We knew the premise, but I was like, I want to be surprised when I go to the screening. And it was great. It was a lot of fun over at the AMC, downtown River East.
And you did that on what, Thursday, Wednesday?
Yeah, that was Wednesday. Wednesday.
My God, you're all over the city.
Yeah. And then yesterday, we spent what?
4 hours?
4 hours, yeah. 4 hours at the Davis Theater for the Middle Coast Film Festival, just doing so many interesting interviews. So much fun was had.
And you'll be able to hear those over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, we'll be sharing those. The Smaller and Smaller Circles interview is up now on WGNradio.com and also Apple Podcasts. So you can find them there. Definitely listen to that. And then we'll be releasing the Middle Coast ones over the
intermittently.
Next... Intermittently. I will say we're going to be gone on October the 6th.
Yes.
So we'll be sharing some older interviews that we did from Middle Coast then. Before we get into this, I have to talk about something that's been happening.
What is it, Tom?
Have you ever heard of an app called Drama Fever?
Drama Fever. No, but it sounds interesting.
So it's a streaming service that specifically, you know, you've got your Netflixes, you got your Hulus, they kind of distribute
Netflixes.
Everything. Is that the plural of Netflix?
Yeah.
You got your Netflixes, you got your HBO Goes, Amazon Primes, and they kind of distribute like a lot of different kind of stuff, very broad base. But recently, I have found my way into the more niche market of streaming services. AMC is one called Shudder that only does kind of horror and genre film. I've been trying out Funimation and Crunchyroll for anime and all that kind of stuff. But Drama Fever specifically distributes Korean dramas. And I had zero context for this, but there were so many different people that I spoke to. They're just like, oh no, you're gonna love it. Like, you think you're not gonna love it, but you're gonna love it. And one that my girlfriend and I have been watching is called Goblin, I think.
Okay.
And I know it stars the lead from Train to Busan, which is one of my favorite horror movies of the last like 5 years. And it deals with this guy who has essentially been cursed to live forever. And he's got this like invisible sword in his chest.
And he just walks around with it?
Yeah, but no one can see it except for the goblin's bride, the woman he is destined to marry and pull the sword out, which would kill him. But it turned, you know, twist of fate, you know, he really falls in love with this girl. And, you know, it's that question of like, you know, I'm 900 years old. I want to die. Like, I'm tired of being alive. But also, if he dies, he can't be with this girl and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, it seems a little bit like a pulpy sort of thing.
It sounds as though there's a part of him that can only be seen by the person that he's meant to be with, and then upon that discovery, there's
fucking layers, man. I
you know
really,
what that reminds me of a little bit?
What
is the movie that we're going to be talking about today?
Yes, the film is called Banana Season, and it's a high concept dramedy centered on an unusually beautiful relationship developed between Peter, a little person who's always believed he could fly like the birds his dwarfish body most closely resembles, and his old high school friend Sun, a talented cage fighter who finds inflicting harm on others more unbearable. more unbearable than simply absorbing the pain himself. When these two old friends reconnect on one fateful afternoon, their parallel journeys lead them to fight the fears and take flight. So let's go around the horn here and get everybody who's involved. It's a full house today. It's a packed house.
We got four.
Let's start over here. James, why don't you introduce yourself?
Great. My name's James Choi. I am the producer and the editor on this film.
Hi, my name is Hang Hoon Lee. I am one of the writers and the director of the film.
Hi, I'm Brennan Stacker, and I am an actor, and I play Brianna.
Hi, I'm Eve Rydberg, and I played May in the film.
Well, welcome all to NoCo Cinema. We really appreciate your time coming on, and thank you so much for sharing this film with us, because we were lucky enough, James was kind enough to send us a screener for festivals, and I watched it last night. Connor, you also watched it.
Yep.
And I the first thing that really grabbed me about Banana Season was what a spectacular relationship that is depicted on this screen between Peter and Sun. Like, from the moment they come together in the film, pretty early on.
Yeah, almost immediately,
they reconnect. And the level of naturalism that the two actors play these characters with, the honest chemistry that you can see on the screen, was really refreshing. I feel like you've got two really well-defined characters that play a little bit off of each other in terms of personality. Sun is he's a little bit more of an elevated guy in the sense that, like, he's pretty high energy most of the time. You know, he's very extroverted. He's very kind of an outgoing dude. Well, Peter
with his own insecurities.
Yeah, with his own insecurities underneath. And then Peter is, you know, quiet. You know, kind of wants to keep to himself a little bit as he approaches the relationship with a certain level of trepidation.
Right. But he's very centered in himself, right? He knows exactly who he is, which bears out in the rest of the film.
Yeah. So I guess let's just start there. Sang-hoon, tell us about making this film and depicting the relationship between these two men on screen.
I think when I just started thinking about these films, always those two characters were in mind, and then I built up the story around these two characters, and then, you know, I created eventually May and Brianna. So you know, the little person, the Peter character, he was always my kind of a main guy when I started this story. And then also the Korean American cage fighter was not real life, but I have my friend, and then he's a not cage fighter basically, but he's a taekwondo master guy, and then I kind of modeled him because he just always wanted to make something, but always kind of a couple of steps behind of making something. But you know, it's not like he's always frustrating or he is just jaded or anything, because he's just, you know, like other people, like we live our lives, but he tries in his own way. So I was always interested in characters, especially when I create a story, that people who doesn't get much spotlight from society and community, but you know, sometimes they have their own beautiful season. So yeah, that is the kind of beginning of this story.
And I love how the film, it kind of keeps you guessing. You don't really know what it's going to be necessarily, because when it starts, you think, okay, it's going to be a buddy comedy, and then it turns into sort of a romantic drama, and then it ends up almost just as a full drama. And then it almost, also at the very end, it kind of comes full circle right back into that buddy comedy. So when you started out with writing this film, you obviously said that starting with the characters was your beginning, but what did you set out to do when you started wanting to make this film, when you decided that you wanted to make it?
I had a very just couple of simple, clear vision, some visual. I don't know, some filmmakers, they just have few just visual before even they start making stories. So I had one vision that the guy is coming framing in, and then the far away there's a water tower, just one little dot is falling. That was always in my image. So, and then some other images, like you described, there's a, you know, the shadow wing growing up.
Oh yeah, I loved that.
So
yeah,
I don't want to talk too much about the film, but anyway, I have to talk about the film. So so I didn't actually have any ending or detailed story. So I had a treatment before I started writing the screenplay, but I was not really tied into a certain storyline. So more like, okay, I have two characters. And then also I had a great couple of writers who just worked with me. So we try to see how they are doing. So there's characters, we know these characters, let's follow and then let's see what happened as if they are real people in life. So we just try to kind of a report and try to research about those characters, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. I like the visual ideas that you had coming out in this film, and you said that you had things in mind up in your head. Do you like to storyboard when you make a film, or like draw out the scenes, or do you just go from what's up here, what you're seeing in your head?
Right, I'm just trying to more like a collecting or getting more references, because mm-hmm. I'm a horrible painter or draw. I cannot draw anything other than stick figure. So yeah. I try some storyboard to share my idea with DP, but I haven't done any detailed storyboarding. This is something I always wish, but I gave up 25 years ago.
Yeah, storyboarding, it's difficult. It's hard to get that down. Like, you see some like Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah,
that guy literally just paints he paints and draws out the entire movie and then just shoots all of that. But I have to say, with what you achieved here with a lot of the shots, it's just it feels like, how is this not painted? You know, you can really see the vision for it.
Absolutely.
And I think you really accomplished what was going on in your head and getting it onto film. I really love the character of Sun. I really think he's an interesting guy. He's so charismatic. James Kaizen plays him so well, and I really find the idea that he's a fighter, but he doesn't like inflicting harm. I think there's a scene when he's in the ring and there's a trainer or coach of some sort, and he's like, when are you going to stop being a punching bag? Why was it important to you to have him be that kind of fighter? And was it difficult to have a character that is, you know, physical in that way, but doesn't want to actually inflict pain?
Mm-hmm. So when I thought about this character, he is not like he has a very deep philosophical idea about being, you know, that kind of a fighter.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I wanted to show a lot of contradiction. They're like a self-contradiction. Like, if you think about even Peter, you know, he's a little person, he believes he can fly, but that is very absurd dream. And then Sun also, he's talented, and then he wants to be a good fighter, but he's just contradicting himself, because as long as you're a fighter, and you're going out there, fight with someone else, that's your job, even if he's doing more like a hobby, you know, as a local cage fighter. But showing that two very big contradiction was kind of, to me, representing like most of people. Like, when a lot of times when you want to do something, and then when that happens, sometimes, you know, you're freaking out.
Mm-hmm.
And then people say, okay, you have to get over that to be a great human being. And if you want to achieve something, you have to just win over your fear inside of you, and then you got to get out of there. But we see then so many people of going that way, becoming great human being, and then just overcome the obstacles. Even I teach film, and then when I teach film to students, okay, good story is like a, you know, character with a good desire and then achieve the goal by overcoming obstacles. That's a good story. But, you know, when I was thinking my movie, like, I was like, fuck that. Like, you know, we see that kind of how many times, yeah, right? And then I want to show the people who really don't make it, but their life is beautiful.
Yeah, the beautiful failure, in a sense. Like, yeah. I just really love watching these guys struggle and not necessarily succeed, you know, or the struggle is really what's interesting, you know. But while I was watching it, my thought was, you know, if they succeed, they succeed, and that's great. If they don't, they don't. But I was just, the process of it and being on this little journey with them was really ultimately the treat for me. I think really summed up in the scene with Peter and Sun when they're sitting smoking a joint in the bathroom. It was just such a great character moment for me. That's when I think I really hopped on board with these guys. I'm like, they are really friends. They are really connecting over something, and these are characters that I cannot wait to spend more time with. I have to ask, what was it like shooting that scene? You know, tell us about how that came how that scene came together and why, you know, this kind of communal drug use was a good thing for them and a good way to describe their friendship.
So obviously that's one of my favorite scenes too. And then that scene was way longer, but thanks to James, and he said, no, it doesn't work. I'm sorry. You got to get really, really shorter. Because I just loved it. I had a lot of improv. We show some kind of improv moment in the end. So I designed few improv scenes at the end of the scene. Maybe you can talk about it a little later how mm-hmm. I designed that. But yeah, and from the beginning, that's the one of the scene I had a clear vision. So how I want it to look like. And then even if it got just cut shorter, I really wanted to put some essential moment when they do this kind of a language game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say a lot. You know, when you just repeat same word over and over and over, probably as you just tested or had this play when you were a kid, and then just all the meaning is just evaporating. You know, one of the linguistics game. When you say mom, 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 like 100 times, and what does even mom mean, right? And the connotation and denotation is just totally separated. So I really kind of wanted to show that they are together, but are they really together? Right. And then, but ironically, that's the moment of really bonding. So it's like it's a very ironical moment. So mm-hmm. they couldn't understand each other. But ironically, I kind of get this guy, you know, that kind of moment.
That's interesting that you bring that up, the linguist game. And there was something that when I watched it, I didn't really think, I thought that it was just like a funny beat, right, in that scene. But it kind of ties in with the question that I wanted to ask. So, like, you spend enough time with something, like a word, you hear it over and over again, you spend enough time with it, something that, like, ma has such an innate meaning that you know what it is, but the more and more you hear it, the more time you spend with it, the more kind of absurd it gets, the more you sort of, like, start losing sense of what it means, right? And then I feel like where the characters really start progressing is in the film when they separate from one another, mm-hmm. when the fighter starts dating the ring girl, and he realizes that she kind of gives him the confidence to overcome those contradictions that you were talking about earlier, where he is a fighter and wants to be a great fighter but can't inflict harm on other people. And then finally, when he gets to the point where he can inflict harm on other people, he wins the fight, then he kind of can't stop.
Right.
So I was going to ask, was that sort of a commentary on something that you wanted to bear out in the film? Like, when somebody finally achieves something that they've wanted for so long, sometimes it changes them in a way not necessarily for the good? Or that was something that I wanted mm-hmm. to ask.
I think that's the part of the character that I just said describe. And then, like you said, finally he makes it and he's happy, but at the same time he's just questioning himself, am I really happy with this? And then obviously he doesn't want to go back to where he was, who just, okay, human piñata kind of a character.
Right.
And then he was sincere when he said to Brianna's girlfriend, said, I want to win, you know, I want to give you that. But that was also a huge misunderstanding, because Brianna said, she fell for Sun not because he's a brilliant fighter, but because he is a sincere human being.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So he just, in the end, he betrays not because of his intention, but because of the, you know, way his life goes. He betrays himself, and he betrays Brianna, mm-hmm. and he betrays, you know, his friend Peter too. So, like, finally, okay, so I feel like I'm going to the direction that I'm going to lose everything. So I think that also made kind of a two different end of direction. Sun goes to one end, Peter goes another end. Yep. So, you know, to prepare the ending mm-hmm. of this film. I don't know, it sounds kind of a very abstract, because I don't want to talk too much about
this. No, we don't want to give anything away.
That was perfect.
So there's a kind of a limit that,
Yeah, absolutely.
Pancho Moeller, who plays Peter, another fantastic member of the cast, of a fully fantastic cast. He was so interesting to watch, and he played his role with such a level of humility. And I wanted to talk about the way that the film engages with him being a little person. There are moments where Sun, and, you know, does refer to him as a midget, or kind of like makes fun of the fact that he's a little person, but it doesn't seem like Peter takes it hard, or it doesn't seem so much of a pejorative. Can you tell me a little bit about having a character who is a little person and engaging with that in the film, but not making it the whole of the film?
Mm-hmm. So his character, if you remember the film toward the end of the movie, his family is about normal size. Mm-hmm. So he's only one little person in his family. So sometimes it happens. Mm-hmm. So he is familiar with living with the normal size person. So probably when he was young, he didn't recognize it. And then all of a sudden it hit him very hard. So I'm very different. So that's the moment that he decided to be different, because otherwise he couldn't kind of justify his existence in his family and in his society. So he always, I think that desire, because no matter what I do, basically, like I said, this character doesn't have like a high philosophy, just very strong motivation of Peter is just, I want to be different, because mm-hmm. there must be the reason I am this, you know, the little person. So then he is thinking and thinking, and then, okay, got it. I can fly. Totally, I can do it. Of course, that was an absurd dream, and then he has mm-hmm. never been successful, but he will be successful. So that's the from his root, as from his family. And then also, I think if you see him, Pancho, as a character, because before I worked with Pancho, I haven't had a chance to work with little people as an mm-hmm. actor or any kind of some sort of a story form. So I try to talk a lot with him. And then he is, of course, very confident person as an actor. And mm-hmm. then he used to be a skateboarder, professional level of skateboarder.
Yeah,
so if you Google find some YouTube video, you cannot believe like how great he was.
Yeah, he's one of the first little people to ever get endorsed as a professional skateboarder,
right? Yeah,
which is spectacular.
And his life itself is very colorful and great, and he's yeah. also very successful in LA as an mm-hmm. actor. So I try to talk to him more, and then he's being a little person is also, he's aware of it, and then he's also, you know, telling me that I'm just getting a lot of character role, you know, some mm-hmm. some horror movie, you know.
Yeah, so he was in Rob Zombie's 31. Movie. Yeah.
So wow. He was really happy that he can play this drama. So kind of try to find out, or sometimes try to kind of change my dialogue and the character into more Pancho's actual life and advice, because obviously he knows life as a little person. Mm-hmm. So I think that helped me a lot to understand even my character through Pancho too. So
I would like to talk a little bit about, we've been talking about how you directed the film, but you also wrote the film, and you mentioned earlier that there was a large amount of improvisation that was happening during the rest of the film mm-hmm. and various scenes. Could we bring the rest of the actors in and just talk about a little yeah. bit about how it was to be able to improvise in a film? And then I'm also curious about how much of the film was really improvised. So let's...
All right, Eve, go.
Go, quick.
I mean, a great deal of the film was written. I think it was sort of that there would be some space at the top and at the end of scenes right. to bring in sort of moments of spontaneity or something that you're feeling. Mm-hmm. And I think also, Sung-hoon could speak more to this. It was more... Sun and Peter's scenes, I think, that were improvised. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of my scenes with Pancho were pretty carefully written. I mean, it was a really wonderful experience. Pancho himself is such a warm, charismatic human. And I think kind of to what you all were talking about just now, so much of this film is about these two characters that on the surface seem really different and seem really outside of society. But ultimately, they are human, just like the rest of us. And the way that Brianna and May both deal with these men is not from a place of, oh, you're such a weird person, like mm-hmm. you're so outside of society. It's really like seeing them for who they really are and what their soul really is. And I think that was a huge part of this script, was that these women see these men for who they truly are, as opposed to like the way society has placed them in the world. That really doesn't have anything to do with improv.
Well, it's yeah. important, because those character moments are super, that's what's interesting about it. And I mean, it definitely helps that both James and Pancho are like so damn funny. Like they're so funny yeah. to watch, and they're mm-hmm. so, it's that warmth, it's that humanity that they approach the characters with, despite being like different in personality. I just love when two characters get together and do something really, it's magical. It really is pretty magical. And like I said, I can't get enough of them. Like, I could spend 2-3 hours watching them in these characters, in these roles. Can you tell us, Brianna, a little bit about your experience on the set?
Sure. Working with James was a fantastic experience. He has such a light and a grace about him when it comes to approaching his character. And, Brianna meets Sun kind of in a tumultuous part of her life. Kind of, they're both in these transitional stages where they don't necessarily know where they're going, why they're going the direction they are, if mm-hmm. they're even happy with the direction that they're going in, and they kind of just like bump into each other, and it's just sort of this spontaneous combustion of a relationship that happens. And which is such a gift as an actor, because when you have that juxtaposition, you know, inside of a character where their, you know, their private life and their public life are competing like that, it just creates this enormous challenge to find the truth within that without, mm-hmm. you know. And working with James was fantastic because he does that so well. So I honestly, when I was in the scene with him, it was just like all I did was play off of what he, you know, gracefully gave me, and that was mm-hmm. fantastic. And then the scene would be over, and I'd be like, "Whoa, oh,
we all just, yeah,
whoa, that was magical."
You have, like, yeah, you had an out of body experience. Yeah, so nice.
Yeah. And then you know, Sung Hoon's writing within that is just gives you more of the ammunition, and I loved it because a bedroom scene with James, I remember he would put in like little tidbits, like little lines that weren't necessarily written, but they were just like natural to say. Mm-hmm. And as a Chicago improver, I always love that because it's like throwing a curveball into the scene, and yeah. it's just like, oh, wait, oh, yeah. And it brings a natural, like, a natural buoyancy to the scene as well that just adds to it. So, yeah.
There was that scene in the Korean restaurant too, yes. which that actually yes. there was a lot of improv in that scene.
Okay, yeah, yeah. That was what I was going to ask.
Yeah, yeah,
how absolutely. Could that all be written out?
Right? No, that was, yeah, there was some improv in there for sure. And we did actually drink some soju.
was that like an end of day kind of scene? You actually got to do some drinking?
Yeah, a little
after
small
shooting,
amount.
We had dinner there, right?
Yeah. I mean, they just kept bringing out food.
Yeah.
And it was so yummy.
I
was
like, James kept ordering.
Keep the cameras rolling. Keep the cameras rolling.
This is good stuff.
Yeah. I mean, he was in such good shape for the shoot, and he would actually run to set. He was very like, he was just in such good shape and took, you know, the cage fighting so seriously, but he just, his metabolism was probably so
quick,
high that he just kept, you know, ordering cream. It was
hilarious. Like, during the scene,
I've heard of worse days on set, you know. Let's say that.
Yeah, absolutely. It was great. Absolutely.
Those abs were not spray on.
No.
That's for sure.
Oh, no.
No, sir.
So I wanted to talk a little bit about the character of Brianna, because there are a lot of different emotional states that you have to go through. Was that difficult at all during it? I mean, coming from an improv background, you obviously have depth in, and it's obviously played out in your performance. But I was curious about what it was like, because there are some seriously emotional scenes in that. And I was wondering what your experience was doing those.
Wow. Yeah, as I mean, again, it's such a Brianna, the character and the writing and everything was such a gift. It's like, it's awesome as for an actor to be able to tackle things where you look at the script and you're like, oh, I don't know if I'm gonna be able to pull this off. But no, I mean, each scene, being able to be in a room with a director that is so on top of his directing abilities, and being in the room with an actor that is so on top of his acting abilities, it's honestly like, once you get in there, you're breathing the air that they're giving you. And it's like, when you get lost or you're like, I don't know, you put all of your energy onto the other person. And like, I was lucky enough to have it fed back to me. So really just, I was just honestly living in each moment as they were given to me. and what came out kind of came out. It's the best thing when you leave a scene and you're like, I don't remember what I did or what happened. That's kind of how I know that I'm doing it right. Mm-hmm. If they're like, so how did that feel? And I'm like, I have no idea. Did it look good?
Yeah.
Did it?
You're just so in the character.
Yeah. Right. And so, yeah, it's taking it one step at a time, each emotion at a time. And, with the right words, that ebb and flow of emotion just luckily comes.
It felt natural.
It definitely felt like, yeah, going through spikes of anger and then into like sadness and then into like happiness was natural.
Very nice. Eve, the last time we saw you, mm-hmm. you were in a very different type of movie.
Yes. Very different.
It was called Makeout Party.
Emily Esperanza.
Yes. One of our favorite filmmakers. It seems kind of obvious, but tell us a little bit about the differences between being on set doing Makeout Party and doing Banana Season.
Yeah, I mean, it was, just right down to the way it was produced was very different. Makeout Party was like an ultra low budget, like DIY experimental film. And Banana Season is still an indie, but definitely a little bit more of a traditional narrative and a feature also. So, and a much larger crew, which was wonderful. I mean, as an actor, it's great to have that kind of resources. Also, on Makeout Party, I was producing and acting, which was an sort of insane undertaking on my part. I was also sort of the AD, so it was
many hats.
Did you also do craft services?
Were you cooking? Yes, I was. Yeah. So that, you know, that was many hats for this. It was such a gift to be able to just come in, focus on my one thing, which was acting, and you know, connecting with my scene partner, which was mostly Poncho, and I also had a son in this movie, which was really cool, like a child. So that was a really interesting sort of thing to think about, like what would it be like to have a kid and interact with this like adorable. His name is Alec, and he was just like a charming kid, like 9-year-old, I think. We were just talking before this, like he's going to be so much older. We made this movie a couple years ago, so right. We're going to see him at the Siskel Center in next week, and it's like gonna be so fun to see him. But it was a wonderful experience. It was fall, I think, we were shooting, and the weather was beautiful. There was this one day we were shooting this picnic scene, and like the sun was setting, it was golden hour, and it was just a really beautiful experience, and to feel like everything was taken care of. I didn't have to worry about the craft services, and I didn't have to worry, you know, so that was really a gift, and it was a very different experience. They're both really valid and really wonderful, but it was really fun to just focus on the nitty-gritty acting part of this.
So, Eve, forgive me if I got the timeline wrong, but aside from Makeout Party, I saw on the internet that you were also, you went to France and you made a movie in French. What was it like speaking in French in a movie and then having to speak English again?
Yeah, really fascinating experience. That is a film that is still in production. It's called Sister Carrie. Daniel Nearing is directing it. And we were in France for 3 weeks in July. The last third of the film is in French, and it was an amazing experience. I had been working with a coach for the last like 4 months on, I took French in high school and, you know, and I'd been studying a bunch leading up to this role, but, luckily my co-star in that, Fabrice, Camille, he's French. He's from Paris. So working with him and then working with my coach, who is also Parisian, really, really helped. And it was an amazing experience. I had never been to Paris, so to be in Paris, seeing the Eiffel Tower for the first time and shooting a scene in front of it was like, I was pinching myself. It was wild. It was really, really cool.
Très chic.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Super cool.
je ne sais pas.
What the French call a certain I don't know what. Sang-hoon, you yourself are a native of South Korea.
Yes.
And when did you come to the U.S.?
I think I started going to film school 2001 or something. Mm-hmm. I just came to Chicago just two months after I got admission. So mm-hmm. first time I came here, it was just crazy. First year was just all kind of a chaotic year. So somehow I survived. I went to the Art Institute of Chicago.
Right.
So
a prestigious school.
It is expensive.
And truly.
That's the first word that comes to mind.
Yeah, but for me as an international student, pretty much same. Even if you go to the state school, if you don't have a scholarship, it's pretty much the same. So yeah, and then I just thought, okay, I will just work under the table. Hey, who cares? Chicago is a big city.
Yeah.
And then that was wrong idea. So 1 year after, I had to take a semester, two semester off because I didn't have any money. Went back to Korea. And then just work what I used to do at the time. I was a game director. I was making an online game at the time.
Oh, really?
So yeah, very early stage of multimedia. What is it? Multi-user online game. Mm-hmm. So I don't, probably you guys don't know, like EverQuest.
Wait, you worked on out?
No.
Wait, you worked on EverQuest?
That kind of game.
Okay, just like
EverQuest is made by Microsoft. So I in Korea. So in Korea, it's like a
what real, can't you do?
Love like a multi-user online game. So nine is I started making game called Mud Game, multi-user dungeon. So okay. It's a text-based game. If you type north and then there's a description.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
You
yeah.
go north and then there's a goblin or attack goblin and. That kind of weird game.
That's really cool, though. That's
yeah. So I was making game not because I love game, because my brother was running that company, so it was kind of family business. Mm-hmm. So I came back and then I finished school, and then after that, yeah, somehow I just survived. And then yeah, I watched a lot of Korean drama at the time, but not anymore. I'm kind of a when I just talked about that drama, I have no idea. Do I know that drama?
Yeah, it's very recent.
I'm sure that girlfriends, oh, she's my half-sister. Oh, yeah. You know, they always have a weird relationship going on. So,
With South Korea, I think we've really seen over the last 10, 15 years, a while, there's been the South Korean film community, the South Korean film business has
very
been
much
just,
broken into the mainstream.
Yeah, it's broken into the mainstream in a lot of ways. Whether it's something like the Vengeance trilogy, you know, stuff like Old Boy, and more recently Train to Busan, which again, I went head over heels for. I was like, I did not know that you could still make a zombie movie interesting. And they absolutely did it in every way, shape, and form. What was your experience growing up in South Korea with films versus what you found it's like now? Like when you were growing up, were there a lot of American films available to see, or was it mostly like just a few got through to South Korea? And do you think it's changed now?
I think there's a huge change. When I was in Korea, like the 90s and then early 2000s, so there are not many filmmakers who just made their name internationally. Mm-hmm. So, of course, there were Korean films, but only like it was just screened for a Korean audience. Right. So, but after, like you said, Park Chan-wook, since he's huge success, and then people think, okay, so our story can be interesting to international audience. So since then, there are so many films that are successful in festival and then even European market and even here too. But if I knew when I was in Korea it was going to be like this, maybe I wouldn't have moved here. But it was very limited kind of access to the film and even Korean film. There's not many films were made at the time, mm-hmm. way under 100 films. So, but mostly American movies. But we had censorship. Now, I think still there's some kind of a censorship. So then a lot of movies were aired in TV. So I watched a lot of American movies, dubbed American movie. Mm-hmm. So, and then also censored movie. So, like, for example, Once Upon a Time in America, I watched it on TV. And the first scene of the movie was that, young Jennifer Connelly is dancing. And then, you know, the Robert De Niro character is, like, peeping outside the barn. That was the first scene. So, actually, in the movie, there was maybe 40 minutes.
Yeah, just right before that.
Yeah, that kind of a...
Wow, and that's a movie that's been cut down already. That's like a four-hour movie that they turned into, like, maybe two.
Yeah, and then a lot of dubbed movie. But I love to, you know, go to the movie theater with mm-hmm. a subtitle. That was my only kind of a memory. And then my sister was a filmmaker, so that was my huge, huge influence. When I was a teenager, she's 7 years older than I am, so she was my... kind of hero. She talked about film set and then actors, and then I was like, oh, I want to be a filmmaker.
It's in the family blood.
Yeah.
That's kind of spectacular. I think we've done a disservice to one of our guests, silently sitting in the background as, you know, just kind of like watching it all happen.
The reason we're all here today.
Yes. Mr. James Choi, who is a producer. And a superstar at that.
Editor as well,
right? Editor as well for the film. James, tell me a little bit about how you got involved with this project and why you wanted to get involved with the project.
Sure. So Sangun and I had a mutual friend that we knew that had introduced us a while back. And, you know, we stayed in contact. But, you know, he had written the script and he had come to me and said, hey, I'm looking for a producer. I don't have money. And I'm like, I don't have money either.
Cool.
Let's hang out. Right?
Yeah.
The Chicago story. Right?
So let's figure it out. And I think, you know, what drew me to the story is, I mean, this is a movie that was made a couple years ago. And, you know, this is obviously right now in the forefront of film is all about diversity and all about trying to make movies for the under, you know, represented. But back then, you know, you don't get scripts like that that come across your table or just people. I mean, and this isn't that long ago, but even back then, it wasn't like they were just flooding the market, right? So, you know, when he gave me the script, I mean, right off the bat, we have an Asian lead, a little person. And I was like, this is really interesting, right? These are characters we don't see very often. And so right off the bat, that was really sort of what drove me to connect and move forward with this. And obviously he had some really great visuals in there, as he mentioned, in regards to how he thinks about story. And when you're reading the script, like regardless of whether it's traditional and has those sort of traditional structured beats to it that commercial movies might have, I just thought there was something there. And when I'm working with directors, it's really just about trusting that they're going to have a vision for the story. But if there are elements that are interesting, like the casting, that was ultimately what drove me to the project.
I want to talk about your editing process, because as anybody knows, you know, there's a million ways that a story can be told, but the one that gets published or the one that gets released is the job of the editor to really make tie that story together. And I don't think that, I mean, there's a million ways that it can be done, but the way that you put it together, the pace is crisp and it moves well and all of the beats are there. What was it like editing the film, and also what's your background?
Thank you for that. I don't have a background in editing. I mean, I've been producing and I've been directing and producing a lot of my own stuff, features and otherwise, and I've been editing those more by necessity, maybe. I mean, I'd love to collaborate with another editor, but I've been doing that on my own, more out of necessity. And then, but I like editing, and so I just approached him about the possibilities of doing that, and he was open to doing that. But when I'm editing, there, it's not like I put an editor's sort of stamp on it, as traditional editors may.
Sure.
I mean, I think I just go instinctually, and then it's really, again, up to the director. I mean, I'm talking to the director to see how they feel about it, and ultimately they're going to make the decision. But yeah.
Well, it's interesting, because I love that sometimes, especially in film, a recurring theme is that necessity is the mother of invention.
Yeah.
And a lot of people wind up doing things on a film, in a film, that they just kind of are like, well, you know, someone has to do it. I might as well do it. And it turns out really great. As Connor said, the pacing is great, very crisp. And since you don't have any, you know, formal, you don't really have formal training in it, right?
Right.
What was it like sitting down in front of a nonlinear editing, say, like you've got Adobe Premiere or Final Cut Pro open in front of you, and you're just like, shit. Like, what was it like basically having to teach yourself the basics of editing and putting together not just, you know, some shorts, but also this is a feature. This is a feature length film, about 100
hour 45.
Yeah, hour 45. Did it get overwhelming at all?
No, I mean, Banana Season wasn't the first film I've edited two features prior to that.
Okay.
So it wasn't a process that was unfamiliar or overwhelming. I mean, I think this process went really fast. I mean, you know, I'm on the set watching them shoot it. Mm-hmm. I'm very familiar with the script. So at that point, once the footage is in, it's like, it literally is a really easy process.
You had it already kind of constructed in your head.
Totally. So it wasn't difficult at all or long. I think the long part was just going back and forth with notes afterwards. Mm-hmm. I mean, the initial layout of the cut was really quick.
How long did it take you guys to finish it and get the product that you were like, yeah, let's put this in the festivals?
2 years.
2 years.
Yeah.
Editing, first rough cut was really quick. And it was like it didn't even take a couple of months. And then after that, we had a Christmas break and all that. Mm-hmm. And then after that, we just tweak here and there, and then we got a picture lock maybe almost 1 year after the shooting.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then after that, we had a lot of VFX in the green screen.
Yeah.
We had to take care of it, and the music, and then my musician and green screen and all that guy were in LA, so it was not easy to just, it's not like we sit down and do it together, so it always takes
it's a lot of sending emails and that sort of thing. But still, 2 years, that's pretty quick for an indie film. That is pretty quick, and already it's going to be getting its premiere at the Gene Siskel downtown. Tell us a little bit about the premiere.
Well, Sangam can speak on that. There's a connection there with the art school, so the Art Institute of Chicago and Siskel.
Yeah, so as you know, Gene Siskel Film Center is Gene Siskel Film Center of the Art Institute of Chicago.
Right.
So, and most of my film was screened there. I don't know, because of I'm alumni, and then I know director, and then all the programmers there. So that's good to have know them. And then also, I always loved it, what Gene Siskel Film Center is doing, like a small film festivals, and they have their own program. So they really try to introduce art films and independent film, especially local films. They are really generous to local films. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm really happy to have that my Chicago premiere there, even if it is not festival venue. So if it's a festival, you can get another laurel on your poster.
But yeah,
I feel really extremely kind of proud to show my first feature film there. All the films that I screened I produced or I shot. Mm-hmm. So this is obviously my first feature film as the director. So
So saying, when is the screening at the Gene Siskel? When can people go see Banana Season?
We are going to have two screening on Friday, October 5th, 8 p.m. and Sunday, October 7th, 5 p.m. So we're going to have two screenings at the Gene Siskel Film Center in Chicago.
Two chances to go
make a night of it, people.
Yeah.
And there will be a Q&A, right? And some of us will be there.
Yes.
Yes.
Yep.
So come meet us.
Yeah. Q&A's are important in film. If you get a chance, especially, I wish whenever I saw a movie, I could do a Q&A with the director. You know, after I saw Jurassic Park Fallen Kingdom.
Well,
number one question, why?
Yeah.
Why?
That. I don't know if the director would have enjoyed that conversation.
J.A. Boyega has to answer for what he did.
Okay, all right.
Bayona, sorry. J.A. Bayona, not Boyega. Bayona. That is the guy from Star Wars.
Yeah.
Very high-quality theater. We were recently there for a private screening, and it had been a while. I think the last thing I saw there was, an animated feature.
It was my first time.
Your first time there, and it's a great place to have a screening. If you've never been to the Gene Siskel Film Center, go over there, because not only are they showing indies that are up and coming, stuff like Banana Season, get a chance to see something that you might not get to see anywhere else, especially on the big screen, but I believe at the Siskel I saw one of my first Andrei Tarkovsky films there. I think I saw...
They're doing Godard all the time.
Yeah, Godard. I think I saw a little bit of Kurosawa there. I think I saw Seven Samurai at the Gene Siskel. So it's a fantastic place if you really love film. And if you really love film, you're going to love Banana Season. Are there any plans to distribute it in a traditional theatrical release or do some video-on-demand stuff?
Yeah, I think we're going to eventually get there. I mean, we're still early on our festival run, so we'll ride this out for the next 8 more months or so, another year.
Right.
Get it out to the rest of the world, mm-hmm. hit all the nook and crooks and all the little places. I mean, there's so many opportunities now and platforms, so mm-hmm. we want to get this out to as many people as possible, and then we'll explore those options. But there's so many great options now with distribution, so we feel confident.
It's a wealth of options. Honestly, for film lovers like Connor and I, it's just a delight that we know so many filmmakers we've talked to recently. They're like, oh yeah, you can watch my film on Amazon for free if you have Prime or something like that, or it's going to get on Netflix. Like when we spoke with The director of Porto.
Yep.
It was just
Gabe Klinger.
Yeah, Gabe Klinger was just on Netflix, maybe like 2 weeks after we talked to him.
And so, further still, there's always things like Vimeo.
So yeah, Vimeo.
There's constant levels and tiers of platforms.
It's weird. I feel like Vimeo is not nearly as popular as it probably should be.
Yeah.
Especially for people who are just like, I don't want to just watch, some dude. What's that guy's name? Jake Paul.
Oh, yeah.
Just act like a dickhead for 5 minutes at a time when I can watch a high quality film on Vimeo.
God, you just put his face in my head and now it's stuck there.
Yeah. That's
anyway,
too bad. But you can. Vimeo is a great place, and there's so many places if you're an upcoming filmmaker to distribute it. Banana Season, fantastic film. Connor and I, two thumbs way up, really enjoyed it. I think I'm gonna watch it again tonight because I can really do. I'm working at the movie theater tonight. I'm just going to hide upstairs and watch Banana Season again on my phone, I think.
Private screening
for myself. Thank you all so much for coming in today. We really appreciate it. We'll kind of like follow down again. We'll start with you, Eve. Where can people find you on social media?
Sure. You can find me on Instagram. My handle is @EvelynMoss. And I also have a website. It's just my name, EveRydberg.com.
Same. I'm also on Insta at Bren Stacker, so BRENSTACKER. And then, www.brennanstacker.com. BRENANN. One in the middle, two at the end.
Very nice. Sengun?
I don't have much except for Banana Season Facebook website and then Banana Season movie homepage, bananaseason.com. I do have Facebook, but I don't have much. Usually my wife just tag me with my photos, so that's about it.
And you got to have some privacy in your life.
Yeah.
And you can hit me up on Instagram as well at JCPLV or on Facebook. I have tons of stuff going on, so I want to collaborate with Chicago, so hit me up.
Yeah, Chicago, get in on it.
Come on, guys.
Now's your chance. Thank you all again so much. Banana Season is the name of the film. Thank you so much for listening to No Coast Cinema. We are your guide to cinema here in the city of Chicago. Again, check out our interviews from Middle Coast Fest. Check out our interview from the Asian Pop-Up Cinema. There's so much great stuff going on. The Chicago International Film Festival, I believe, is coming up pretty soon. So we're going to be trying to get into that, trying to get you the inside scoop. I am Tom Hush.
And I'm Connor Cornelius.
And we will see you all next time.